This is Packer and Durham on ACCN and SiriusXM Channel 371.
You all right this morning?
I am. I'm in a great mood.
That thing's going well for you, apparently.
No.
Yeah. That's it. Yeah. That's the answer. Yes.
I am. I'm doing all right. Okay. Life's good.
Good show today. Andrea Adelson will be here. Tim Hasselbeck, Mark Hersley. Full previews of games around the ACC. Hers has got the call of the basketball/football game of Duke and Kansas.
Wild Sweet Outdoor.
And Tim, of course, will be at Mercedes-Benz downtown in Atlanta for Georgia Tech and Carolina. And Andrea is always good for catch-up information around the ACC. Look forward to that. And in case you missed Travion Cooley yesterday, Louisville running back, young freshman from outside of Raleigh at Knightdale, North Carolina. You'll get that in case you missed it coming up in this opening hour.
Take a sip from my victory cup and get right back to you.
Giants. Really? Are we going
to? He pulled another one out last
night. Did you? Really? Oh. Pulled another one out last night, did you?
Man. Yeah. They are lit. You know, if we could be as lucky as that group, we'd be in business. I'm just telling you.
Lucky as the Giants?
Oh, my goodness.
Oh, okay. I thought you said that group. I'm never quite sure if you're talking about the Giants or if you're talking, when you refer to that group, you don't want to say the name of the rival. So you.
No, they're great.
They're lucky, too.
No, they are really good. But let me tell you something. If we were as lucky as those guys.
As the Giants.
Yeah, my guys.
Yeah.
We would be in business, man.
Would we?
Oh, my goodness. The horseshoe is lodged. I'm just telling you.
With the Giants?
Oh.
Are you throwing minor league guys out there and they're striking out everybody?
I'm surprised they didn't call me and say, Pack, seriously, can you get it over home plate?
They got limitations.
Are you better than that MMA guy, that Conor McGregor dude, tossed it at the Cubs
bad.
Game? Was that like the worst thing you've ever seen?
It's bad. Yeah, it's good.
Why is it that people have a hard time throwing it when they do that? Have you ever done that? Toss the first pitch? And people panic with that. I've never understood.
I didn't get on the mound either, and that still bothers me to this day.
Are you serious?
I didn't.
Wes, you got to get on the mound.
I know. Well, I was at the foot of the mound. Let's put it
that way.
That's
not good. Would you throw it underhanded?
No. Not throw it overhand.
I'm amazed how many really athletic people.
And I kept it in the athletic box so the catcher didn't have to like.
He didn't get out of his position?
Maybe a touch.
A little reach, maybe?
Yeah.
It's amazing how many incredibly athletic people.
Can't throw a baseball.
Who have done that and panic. They just cannot throw it. And I'm like, how is that possible?
I know a lot of people that can, like, swing a golf club, swing a tennis racket, but yet you ask them to throw something? Crazy.
It's really weird. It's like a mental
or
thing.
Or shoot a basketball or do, you know, whatever. Anyway.
But Conor McGregor the other day at the Cubs game, that may have been the worst I've ever seen.
You haven't seen it.
It was, and I'm going to be conservative with this, it was 25 feet. Right of the plate.
It's also the rapper 50 Cent threw a pitch out at a Mets game one time.
Right.
It's worse than that.
It's worse than that.
It's worse than that.
Yeah. Incredible.
50 Cent's first pitch is awful. And Conor McGregor takes it.
Dan Dockich, who's Bud, he's a big Cubs guy.
Yeah, I know.
And when I saw that McGregor thing, I sent him a text. I said, man, your new relief pitcher's outstanding.
Not while I'm having the coffee, please.
I'm sorry. You've already had enough problems today.
But nobody knows.
No, you're good.
All good.
You're good.
The management dry cleaning budget's expensive. All right.
Let's get to the college football playoff.
Well, let's don't.
No, let's do.
Well, let's get to it, but apparently we're not going as maybe as fast as some thought we would.
The college football, I'm going to say this again. The expansion of the college football playoff, I thought was a done deal until one thing happened.
Mm-hmm.
The Oklahoma-Texas story got leaked by the Houston Chronicle, mm-hmm. and then everybody around the country outside that footprint
went, wait a second. They went, wait a second.
Time out. We're going to go to 12. We got OU and Texas going down to the Southeastern Conference, which was great. It's a win-win for that league and those teams, no doubt. I'm not arguing that. But everybody else who is on the outside of that working group, which included Jack Swarbrick at Notre Dame, Greg Sankey, SEC, Bob Bowlesby, Greg Thompson, those are the four. And I like the idea of 12. I do.
I was good with it.
Yeah. I mean, I thought eight was the number, but I was sold on 12.
Right,
but,
until we saw the other part.
And then when the OU Texas story mm-hmm. broke, and I have said this on radio, I am convinced if that story does not break, all right, mm-hmm. hear me out. If everybody, we're going to do the deal, but let's just chill.
November. We need November, people.
If it's December or January or February
Perfect.
that story breaks,
Perfect.
I don't think there is any doubt that we're at 12. That next week we're approving that. Bam, we're in for 12 and let's go.
And we're going to 12 in about 26 or 20. No, we're going in about 24.
Well, as soon as you can, because
right.
ESPN's now negotiating yeah. and they got the rights and let's roll and here we go.
Mm-hmm.
But now when that OU Texas story broke, in particular, a thing called the Alliance got generated almost overnight. And there were a lot of people running their mouths about the Alliance. Oh, it's nothing. It's garbage. In fact, I think one quote I heard was, it's an embarrassment.
I think I heard that too.
I heard that on multiple platforms.
Mm-hmm.
And I kept thinking, no, it's not an embarrassment. You got to look a little bit deeper to what that's all about.
Right.
And I think you found out the answer to the Alliance yesterday afternoon when all of a sudden, hey, we're not against the expansion. In fact, it's the exact opposite. But we're going to go at our pace. And I think that was stamped yesterday. And I think that is an Alliance deal.
Well, the story basically is that yesterday in Dallas, the management committee met. And that then forced the no vote next week in Chicago. Now, to show you how far along the vote in Chicago was, ESPN.com is reporting that flights were already booked for the commissioners and everybody to meet. But that meeting was supposed to take place in Rosemont, Illinois, near O'Hare Airport next week. The commissioners raised numerous issues, some of the commissioners, on a call last week and again in a meeting in Dallas yesterday. When those issues were raised, that basically stalled any potential vote on the expansion of the college football playoff. The commissioners and Jack Swarbrick are going to meet in Chicago, but the full committee, the president's chief administrators, will be available to the committee. But Bill Hancock, the executive director of the College Football Playoff Committee, said now there's, quote, no rush to determine the next move. The next scheduled Board of Managers meeting is January, usually after the CFP. I think it falls like 2-3 days following, if I'm not mistaken. The presidents and chancellors gather at the championship game. Sources with knowledge of the discussion have said there is some interest in an 8-team model, but there isn't unanimous support for it.
That's right.
Let me just offer this, and this is strictly an opinion. There's no fact based on this. 8's a whole different deal than 12 for a lot of people. The G5, Notre Dame, Power 5 conferences. Whole different deal. You take 4 slots out of this, everybody starts to feel a little differently about their neighborhood.
Well, I think what needs to be emphasized, though, there is a feel-good about expansion of the college football playoff in the room. It's just the slow play. It's the timing. And I think it has everything to do with television negotiations, as far as I'm concerned. But we'll see how that plays out. There are other elements. The Rose Bowl wants their deal, as always the case. The Group of Five obviously wants a seat at the table.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't have a problem personally with 12. I was an 8 guy because I do think expansion's good.
Packer plan was 8.
I laid it out. I did it 3 years ago. I said, this is not hard to figure out. You just need everybody on board. But, you know, nothing gets done until something gets sold.
That's it. Now's your time. Maybe now for you to step in there and say, hey, guys, I got a little 8-team thing y'all ought to look at.
Well, they know what they're doing. But this now becomes a power play. And it was always going to be a power play when the Alliance got formed. And you saw basically who had the upper hand yesterday with this thing going, screech.
Right.
Let's just time out. But I do think you're going to see the expansion of the college football playoff. I think the bigger question, though, is, how many people are coming to the party to write a huge check from a television perspective? The company that we're employed by here at ESPN has the rights through the 25 season. So they would love to keep the exclusive rights where they can go negotiate it and have it to themselves. I have a sense that there are others that think, hey, more to the party, the better. We will see how it plays out. But I think this was the first shot of, hey, no, no, no. This fast track of we're going to just rubber stamp this thing to 12, which I thought it's exactly where it was prior to the news at Oklahoma and Texas, which are in the SEC.
Notre Dame Athletics Director Jack Swarbrick offered a comment yesterday following the meetings in Dallas. Quote, the support for expansion is clear, which is great. I think the focus will be on the issues surrounding the 12-team model. Okay. The 12-team model issues, principally based, are length of schedule. That's number one. The potential number of games. And I understand a lot of college football fans that I interact with on trips and things like that have said, but we're really only talking about two teams being involved in a 17-game schedule. Yes, true. And only under certain auspices would that 17 games happen. Still, the fact that these are student athletes, you guarantee you that some presidents and some chancellors are going to have an academic schedule question. Fair?
Without a doubt.
All right. And then the other part about the 12-team playoff has already started to percolate in Pasadena, California. Okay? And for all the people that say, hey, why is the Rose Bowl? Well, again, go back to why the Alliance, and you'll understand why the Rose Bowl. It's just the way it is. That's just, and I know we're in the 21st century, and tradition and habits are being rewritten on a regular basis, and, you know, why in the world is X school and Y conference? Just understand that that one right there is a long, that's a big old hurdle to cross. That's a big one to figure out. And, Mark, you remember this. When we went from the BCS to this, we went to the BCS period. Roy Kramer, who was the father of the BCS, the commissioner of the SEC, Coach Kramer's biggest hurdle was what? The Rose Bowl. He had to get Tom Hansen, who was then the commissioner of the Pac-12, Pac-10 actually, to go to work on figuring out a way to appease the Rose Bowl in years that they would not host the BCS, right? And when Nebraska and Miami played in the Rose Bowl to determine the national championship. In a game, by the way, Nebraska just should have stayed in Lincoln, as I recall.
Still got their check, though.
Well, they did get their check. But the Rose Bowl people were completely out of kilter because the game was not on New Year's Day.
Right.
So, understand there's all sorts of tentacles with the Rose Bowl. That's starting to surface now. Here's the other thing, too. You mentioned television. One of the other little caveats involved in expansion is the reissuing of the bowls that would fall into the playoff rotation, right? The sites that would fall into the playoff rotation. Remember, the playoff's been laid out for, what, 4 or 5 more years in its original grid. How does the expansion of the playoff change the awarding of those and who are going to be the contenders beyond, and what's the number going to be there?
Well, we're in year 8 of a 12-year contract, so when Bill Hancock says there's time, he's right. And but there's a lot of layers here. The Group of Five, again, wants their spot at the table. And again, I like the concept of 12. I did. I didn't think of it at first, but when I saw what the working group came up with, I'm like, hey, I kind of like this idea. The only thing I would have changed is more games on campus in the playoffs, but I understand why you can't do that because you do have bowl partners and you want to appease everyone here. So there's a lot of different levels that are going to have to be stroked in some shape, way, or form here. And they'll get it done. But I think it's fascinating that 4 months ago, we thought this was a done deal. I'm like, when it came out, it was like, wow, they've been working on this for 2 years, these four guys.
The working group.
Sankey, yeah. Bowlesby, Swarbrick,
Craig Thompson. Yeah.
And this is what they came up with. And they talked about, well, we had 60 some odd different combinations. And here's what we came up with. And it was, you know, you're thinking, you know, I liked it. I still like it. But when that story broke, it was a game changer. And I still think there's going to be college football playoff expansion, but it's going to be everybody having something to say as opposed to maybe a few in the room. And that's where we are.
All right.
That was actually a good day for the Alliance in some respects because the Alliance basically stopped.
That was a win?
I thought the Alliance yesterday, There's going to be a lot of people who are going to downplay that. But, hey, we were going to 12. And we still might get to 12, but it's going to be on their time period.
All right. I know we're running late here in the first segment.
Shocking.
Real quick. Do you think in the business world that the Alliance found, pardon the pun, allies in that room?
Yes.
So do I.
There's no question about it.
I think they found more than they probably thought.
Yeah, I think that's one of the reasons you heard the number 8 discussed. Because all of a sudden it was like, no, you know, 12 probably might, 12 might not work.
I can say this. 8, looking at the models of 8, including the Packer plan that was launched several years ago, 8 would reduce the game concerns. 8 changes the dynamic on the games.
It certainly helped to answer that question.
It does, absolutely.
Well, again, I'm for it. Whether we go 8, 12, next week, 2026, right. I think it's good. I think it's good for college football. And in a year like this one,
mm-hmm.
in which we've seen some teams that are almost automatics, Oklahoma, Clemson, Ohio State, teams that we've seen a bunch have struggles early, this college football season already feels different than other ones. I mean, we've had 19 ranked teams after 3 weeks of the season lose, which is the most all time. There seems to be more people that think, hey, we got a shot this year.
Yep.
Doesn't mean that Ohio State, Clemson, Oklahoma don't find it and get on a run and, hey, they're back. We got the same old. But I do think it's good for college football in terms of the health of the sport that more people feel like they are tied into the opportunity to eventually go play for a national championship.
And if you get to 8, you still got slots for the G5.
No doubt. If you do it right.
If you do it right.
I have faith that that group will get it right.
The Packer and Durham Podcast. Here's Mark Packer and Wes Durham.
I'd like to be in Charlottesville tomorrow night.
It'd be a good night. Night football at Charlottesville is always
crisp.
Good. Yeah, it will.
The Swiss are undefeated. Virginia's coming off a loss. Brendan Armstrong's lighting everybody up like a Christmas tree.
Is killing it.
He is.
Brendan Armstrong, by the way, and this is, I mean, we've already talked about how good he's been in the ACC. Well, the numbers nationally, just so you get an idea here, Brendan Armstrong ranks in the top 5 in the country in completions per game. He's second. Passing touchdowns, second. Passing yards, second. Points responsible for, third. Pass efficiency, fourth. Points responsible for per game, fourth. Look at this.
Slacker. I mean, the numbers are crazy good. Crazy good.
I mean, look, there have been, and David Hale had this yesterday. All credit to David, and he always comes up with some numerology on some things. Quarterbacks in the past decade who through three games have had 13 touchdowns, 1,300 yards, 70% completions, and no more than 3 turnovers. You ready for the list?
It's not long.
Brendan Armstrong and Patrick Mahomes.
Period.
That's the list.
Yep.
Stop it.
25 plays of 20 yards or more. Now, I say something like that, all my Clemson buddies cringe.
They're NFL teams that won't have 25 plays of 20 yards or more in the first 4 games.
You're right.
First 6 games.
You're exactly right.
I mean, all right. So it begs the question, Armstrong has done it against William & Mary, Burt Bielema and the Illini, Brett Bielema, Burt to some of his friends, and Saturday night in Chapel Hill when he turned Kenan Stadium into arena football for 30 minutes in the first half, right?
Well, I mean, for 554 yards, he did it for 60 minutes.
So, how do you slow down Brendan Armstrong? Well, I don't know that you slow him down. It's the old basketball analogy. You can't stop him. You can only, Dan Patrick, you can only hope to contain him, right? But containing Brendan Armstrong is a task unto itself. So, who's got the best chance to do it? Well, let's start with one of Packers' favorite stats. Opposing QBR rankings.
Just rolls right off the tip of my tongue.
Here's who's left on Virginia's schedule and their opposing QBR. Whoa, look at the Swiss right there off the top. 20.4 is the opposing QBR. Now, that being said,
would you like to explain what that is?
It's the quarterback rating of your opposing team to date. Now, does Old Dominion, Norfolk State, and Florida State, that's part of the reason Wake is 20.4. Miami, well, you know they've played Alabama. They've also played Michigan State, and they played a pesky Appalachian State team, 75.8. Louisville, they've played Ole Miss. Matt Corral's a Heisman guy at this point,
yes,
one would think, through the early part of the season.
Good question.
The Deacons' defense, a little bit like their offense, where you can name maybe two or three people. Now, all of a sudden, the Deacon defense has got a number. But is the number based on the schedule and who they've played, or is the number based on the talent level? Lyle Hempel, their defense coordinator, does a really good job in Winston-Salem. Boogie Basham is gone, but their guy's back. Jasir Taylor, remember him from the show? I mean, you got guys making plays in the secondary. Here's Mackenzie Milton. That's a pick. Okay? So you start to look at this defense, and again, we're talking about Wake Forest. This is a team people, Travion Red, people need to know how good Wake Forest is, and Friday night is their stage against the quarterback who might be the hottest in the country.
Certainly one of them, and turnovers have been a focal point for Wake Forest, not only this year, but lately they've been outstanding. Now, they're going to have to take advantage of if and when they turn it over for Virginia, because they've not really done a very good job in that department. They've turned the ball over a bunch. They really haven't scored off turnovers a lot, which is kind of ironic given how efficient Wake Forest is. It is a tremendous Friday night matchup.
Mm-hmm.
It really is. And I think the fact that Virginia coming off the loss, where they gave up 59 and North Carolina carved them up every which way, we're talking about so much about Brendan Armstrong. I'm really actually more interested to see what Virginia does defensively. I mean, that could be an issue, because Sam Hartman, we're sitting here talking about Brendan Armstrong, and rightfully so, he's been great. So is Sam Hartman.
Right.
Sam Hartman's a dude, and they play so smart. He's so good with the football. They don't turn the ball over. By the way, Wake has won the last four against Virginia.
Now, I had the game last year in Winston-Salem, and it was back and forth and back and forth. And then late, Kenneth Walker hit a home run pitch on about a 75-yard run to essentially ice it up for the Deacs.
So it's almost a role reversal than a week ago, where Virginia is making a road trip where they've not been good on the road, but they had beaten Carolina four straight.
Right.
This week, they're at home where they've been great, but they've lost four straight to the Deacs. Now, granted, they don't see each other every single year. This goes back for 12, 13 years. But the point is, it's still fresh on their minds that the Deacs got them last year.
Yeah.
And there's a lot at stake. Wake Forest on a roll at 3-0. Virginia, in terms of the coastal race, you have it. We talked about this ad nauseum yesterday. You've got to hold serve at home.
Yep.
There is pressure on Virginia, much like it was pressure on North Carolina Saturday night when the Hoos came to town. You've got to win those games if you're going to get to Charlotte.
Yep.
Have to win it.
844-SAY-ACCN. Bill in Virginia this morning with Packer and Durham. Bill, good morning.
Good morning.
What's going on?
It's a 59% chance of rain, and I want to make a draw a stand in the prediction of Wake Forest and Virginia. And I live in Virginia, actually in Charlottesville. And if Virginia's defense can hold Wake Forest to 21 points or below, I think Virginia's offense has enough to win that game.
Yeah, I agree.
I would agree with that. Totally agree. That's why I just said, you know, we're giving you all the great numbers about Brendan Armstrong, but I'm with you. I think the more interesting part of this game is what does Virginia's defense bring to the table? Can they stop Wake Forest?
Yeah.
Because the Deacs have scored 35-plus in all three of their games. So
correct.
It's not like Wake Forest is rolling out there going, we don't know what to do with the football. They do. This could be a tremendous game Friday night.
Bill, are you still there?
Yes. And obviously, as you said many times on this show, that it's hollow ground in Charlottesville. So if the defense can show up, UVA can win this game.
Yep, and I got a bigger question, Bill. You ready?
Yep.
Is it going to be Bodo's Bagels or Greenberries for coffee and a Danish this morning in Charlottesville?
It's going to be Old Virginia Chicken and coffee.
Oh,
Old Virginia Chicken. I've never had that.
I need to find out about Old Virginia Chicken.
Write that one down.
I've been Bodo's and Greenberries pretty much when I've been up there.
Bill, I appreciate you giving
Thank you, Bill.
I appreciate you giving me the weather forecast too. High-low chance of rain. That's all you need.
That's all you need.
59% chance.
We don't need any fronts moving through.
I love the fact that it's the first thing he said. I laughed because I'm like, that's all. Hey, I haven't even been outside other than take the dogs. But, hey, high, low, chance of rain. It's all you need to know from your local weather.
But here's the other thing, too. He brings up rain. Track it, Scott Stadium, get a little sloppy time to time. If it get heavy rain at some point during the day. What does that do to the run games? Virginia relies on throwing it around the yard a little bit.
Throw it all over the
Wake
yard.
Wake Forest, hold the ball, mesh play.
Forever. I found my Blockbuster Bowl ball. You see that right there? That's a legendary ball right
Pretty
there.
Pretty excited about this ball being right here.
It's engraved.
Yeah, I know.
It's one of those deals. See that?
Let me see if I can put this on camera, too, for
1991 Blockbuster Ball.
Jen, can you see that? 1991 Blockbuster
Ball.
Yes, sir. Look at that, kids, right
that
there.
That was Alabama-Colorado.
Sure it was.
One of my jobs.
Did y'all decide that game in October back in the day like you did Penn State that year?
No. We had the official Blockbuster Ball blazers you wore and all that nonsense.
Did you have a blazer?
No, of course not.
Why not?
I was in charge of making sure that Ralphie the Buffalo
was
well-fed.
That's when your Ralphie experience occurred.
Yeah. Brutal.
30 years ago, kids, right here.
That's it.
Huh? We got it sitting right here.
They don't make those anymore.
No. Heck no. Heck no.
And they don't even make Blockbusters anymore. Yeah. I think there's one left in Oregon. That's it.
Bend. There's a Netflix special about it.
Back then, they had 10,000 of them around the country.
That's right.
We're down to one.
One.
As we speak. Just like that football.
Three-day rental and please be kind and rewind.
That's it.
Packer and Durham. This is the Packer and Durham podcast.
Tell you what, you haven't seen Malik Willis.
He's a dude. Now.
He's a talented player.
Yes, sir.
From the Atlanta area, originally started his career at Auburn, and there have been days that I think Auburn would have liked to have kept Malik Willis.
And you talk about all that offense with that particular game.
Yeah.
Both teams, though, are ranked in the top 10 total defense.
I know.
So I'm just saying.
Aren't we off to a good start?
That'd be a good win, man. 3-1, that'd be great news for Dino. It'd be great news for Josh Macri.
It would be good news. The triple voice of victory.
Multiple.
Quick news from South Florida here before we get to this. Derek King, unlikely to play Saturday is the resolve from Manny Diaz because of the shoulder, I'm going to guess, banged up on the leg too, but the shoulder injury, he's downgraded to doubtful for the game against the mighty Blue Devils.
I wouldn't play him either. I mean, you got to get really they're going to beat the daylights out of Central Connecticut State. I mean, this is roast beef A&M when I was referring to. But you need Derek King to go for the Virginia game next Thursday. That's Thursday night.
Correct.
So if you can get through the weekend without Derek King's services, and I think Miami can.
Mm-hmm.
That's the best case scenario. You give him a little extra rest, but you got to be good to go for Virginia when the Hoos come to town next Thursday, a week from tonight.
Correct.
There at the Hard Rock.
That
will be a big deal.
Jake Garcia or Tyler Van Dyke would be the replacements for De'Eric King. If you watch the Miami Spring game here on ACC Network, both showed you something.
They look good.
Yeah. And both highly thought of, obviously, and guys that they were excited about in the program. Rhett Lashley had very complimentary things to say about those guys also going through the month of August. So, that being said, those are one of those guys gets the first snap, I would suspect. And here's a look at the spring game. And I'm telling you now, both guys have got the ability to do – now, they're not going to do it at the level King does, but both of them can make plays. Look at this dime.
Well, this should be actually, I think, good news for Manny Diaz because you're going to get two guys and they're both going to play.
Yeah.
You should get, number one, great experience, in-game experience.
Yep.
You will have a physical advantage against who you're playing. You need to get some confidence back, and we can sit here and talk about quarterbacks all you want at Miami because I think their quarterback room is just fine, thank you. What they've got to improve on, I've harped on it for a week and a half, tackle the man with the ball.
Mm-hmm.
And I think physically they should be in such an advantageous position this weekend that needs to be something you see if you got a ticket at the Hard Rock to go see the game or you're going to watch it. You got to see Miami take people and put them on the ground and hopefully go back to fundamentals and understand this is the way you were supposed to play when you got a U on your helmet. They've got to do that because if that doesn't improve, Wes, I don't care who's playing quarterback. I mean, that has got to improve in Coral Gables. So,
no question.
Manny's the defensive coordinator. He knows what he's got to do. And I suspect they will cruise on Saturday, get a nice win, hopefully can keep De'Eric King away from football for a weekend. And then next Thursday, it is go time when the Hoos come to town.
That's it. It's one of a handful of games ACC teams have this weekend against either FCS or non-Power 5. And so far through the fall – The ACC's 18-4 against that group. You see the games coming up here. FPI gives you the terms. Liberty 53% to win at Syracuse. Again, Hugh Freeze, good team. Malik Willis, sensational. Pittsburgh, a heavy favorite. Virginia Tech against Russ Huseman and the Spiders, a heavy favorite. And Miami, everything but 100% against the Mighty Blue Devils from New Britain.
Inexcusable to lose any of those three games. Yeah. I'm going to emphasize that. Inexcusable to lose any of those games.
Now, all right.
Pitt laid an egg last week. They had the egg salad sandwich against Western Michigan. That was a bad loss. Okay,
Max gotten the ACC a little bit here. Yeah, Northern Illinois beat Georgia Tech.
On the road.
Yeah.
But the Pitt loss, well, I mean, Georgia Tech's a work in progress. Pitt coming off beating Rocky happened. Top, you cannot lose that game.
Right.
So I expect all three of those guys, we have a ton of highlights from all three of them.
The records of current ACC schools in the non-Power 5 out-of-conference game is pretty interesting here.
You're talking about coaches now.
Coaches, right. Satterfield 5-0, Jeff Hafley 4-0. Dabo's 24-1. Do you remember the loss?
I do. In fact, I was in Dallas, Texas when they lost because they were playing TCU in the rain in Clemson.
Yep.
Gary Patterson, they had a really terrific team. TCU was a tight game. And there you go. Rest is history.
By the way, TCU is a Mountain West member then, too. Yep. That's why that one's in the list. Dave Doran, 25-2. Mack Brown, 24-3, 4-1 in the current stint. Lost his Appalachian. Dave Clawson 20-3. Cutcliffe 31-6. Pat Narduzzi, Dino Babers, Justin Fuente, Manny Diaz all playing outside the Power 5 loop this week. And you see their respective records. Mike Norvell 1-1. Jeff Collins 2-4. That includes the Citadel loss and the one to Northern Illinois this past season opener.
2 weeks ago.
Yeah, 2 weeks ago to start the season. By the way, winning percentages, the coaches with out-of-conference, non-Power 5 matchups rank 8th, 10th, 11th, and 12th in the league. So, there you go. If you're Virginia Tech.
You got this game.
I got the game.
You're going to Blacksburg.
Going to Blacksburg. Looking forward to seeing.
7th best team in the league.
Well, according to you, it's 2.
I got the Hokies, 2.
2, yeah.
You're over here again.
Seven.
Right over there.
The idea of red zone efficiency, if that one thing is better, Virginia Tech's going to have a heck of a year. They're going to be – but that failed them miserably last week at Morgantown. Some due in part to the Mountaineers and Neil Brown, good coach.
Give the other guy credit, too.
West Virginia
plays good defense.
They do, and Neil Brown does a great job. They had a penalty. They had a missed throw here. By the way, called complete, then overruled incomplete, and then reviewed. The hat trick of calls, if you will, Pack.
Well, the thing that's frustrating with this sequence, obviously you didn't score, but, man, offensive line is your strength. You had all the momentum in the world. Mm-hmm. Everybody in that stadium knew, oh, my gosh, we're going to lose this game to Virginia Tech. After
right.
really being in complete control for most of the day, and the Hokies did a great job getting back in the game, and then they had it exactly where they wanted it.
Right.
You know, you're inside the 10. You got a great offensive line. You got all the momentum in the world, and they just could not figure out the code to get in the end zone.
And here's the thing. You mentioned this earlier in the week. Braxton Burmeister made some sensational plays in the comeback.
No question.
I mean, a third down conversion that's lights out, a couple of throws, one running to the West Virginia bench, just drills a ball. Travion Robinson played well. I know they're missing James Mitchell. I'll be the first to tell you that's a huge problem, especially when they get close, right?
Because he's such a weapon. Can run, block, catch.
Yep.
I mean, he's a nightmare from a defensive standpoint.
So, be interesting to see how Coach Cornelson and Coach Fuente rework the red zone infrastructure on Saturday against Richmond. By the way, Spiders, legit.
Legit what?
Pretty good FCS team.
Oh, no, you're right.
But Russ Huseman's done a nice job. This is not your just roast beef A&M rolling through there.
Okay. Well, I expect Virginia Tech to win the game. Justin Fuente at home against unranked teams, non-conference.
Yeah.
10-0.
That's it.
10 up? No.
That's
losses.
It.
I expect there to be a W from Blacksburg.
Yeah. 0-3 last week.
Because if they lose that game, Wes, F is the biggest word in sports. If they lose that game, I cringe at where you're going to have the Hokies next week.
Here's Mark Packer and Wes Durham.
In case you missed it, Trevion Cooley joined us yesterday.
Yeah, I enjoyed the visit.
Yeah, he was good. The least we could do is, of course, do a little Louisville red in the backdrop. Make sure everybody feels right at home.
You and the lights.
The lights are great. Wait till you see what I got planned. Wait till you see what I got planned.
I'd like for y'all to see the last coaster. There it is, the last Packer and Durham coaster.
You're not going to need no stinking coasters.
Not going to need any mugs. Not going to need any hats. We got lights. We got the light guru coming back again today, apparently.
Oh, yeah.
I just heard.
Yeah.
More lighting.
Yeah.
Well, if you're going to stay here all the time like you're doing, you might as well.
I'm here,
get your lights because you're not going
anywhere.
I'm here
18 hours a
That's
day.
Right. All right, let's move on.
This is my little world
let's
down
move
here.
On. Trevion Cooley, Louisville, big win against UCF. They turn right around and play Florida State on Saturday afternoon. That game, by the way, is over on ESPN2. Anish Shroff, Mike Golic Jr. will be in Tallahassee.
That's important.
Yeah, it is, with Taylor McGregor. But the way the schedule's set up, the Cards played 3 games in 12 days. And that's kind of how we started our visit with Trevion Cooley. 3 games, 12 days. How'd you guys kind of get through that and still be able to get off to a 2-1 start?
You know, we had a great week of recovery, and that played a big factor in how we performed on Friday.
All right, so there's this play in the game where you kind of run the wheel route, I guess, and you are, to say wide open would be an understatement. I mean, there's nobody. How in the world did you think there's no way I'm going to come clean out of this, right? There was no way you were coming clean.
I knew. UCF backers, you know, they bite down pretty hard on they bit down pretty hard. They thought it was going to be a run. And as soon as I saw, you know, 10 have his eyes in the backfield, that's when I knew, you know, I should release and I should get out as fast as I could.
Trevor, you know what's funny about this play is Malik Cunningham. Throw the ball. He's pointing. He's screaming. He knows you're wide open, and he's pointing like, man, get rid of the ball, man. 23 is wide open. Well, just watch Cunningham.
Oh, that's awesome.
he pretty much knew from the beginning.
Yeah, exactly. So what are you thinking? You're thinking, okay, they're going to throw the ball to me. I got to catch it. I mean, what are we thinking?
I mean, I was really thinking just run, honestly. I never doubted the catch. I never thought about the catch. I was just thinking, like, as soon as I get this ball, I know I have to go, you know, in the end zone. Well, it was a big play. It was 28-28 in the fourth quarter. So
yeah.
I knew I had to score. I didn't have a choice but to score.
You know, it was such a fun game to watch because it was like a tennis match. They scored, you scored. And then you scored, they scored. And you just figured watching the game, man, whoever gets the first break is going to win it. And lo and behold, you know, UCF made a great play. Tip pass, interception, positive side of the field. And I know you're thinking, oh, son of a gun, we played so well in this game. Such a clean game. No turnovers. They get the ball. Now the defense has to make a play. And lo and behold, the very next play, we go six, you know, pick six heading this way for a touch. I mean, I know that's why you signed with Louisville, but, man, that place was going bonkers. That just had to be a blast on the sideline watching it.
Yeah, it was funny. I wasted so much energy when we got to pick six. I swear, I thought I was cramping up for a second. running after Jalen, you know. It was just insane. I never witnessed anything like that, you know, in my football career. I've been playing football for a very long time, since I was 4 years old. And I never witnessed anything like that, you know. It was just insane to me. It was insane to see.
Trevion, let's be honest. You're a young guy. Jalen Alderman's a young guy. We don't necessarily think of that maybe with Louisville because we're familiar with Cunningham. We know about, you know, we had Mitchell on last week. We know that, you know, Braden Smith's been there a while. Some of the defensive guys, Monty and CJ, they've been there a while. But it seems like young guys are really kind of booing a little bit of Louisville here early in the year.
Yeah. Honestly, this 21 class is going to be a great class here, you know. They push us to think, okay, my coach pushed me like I've been here for 3 years, you know. That's his biggest thing. He doesn't treat me like a true freshman or a freshman at all. So we honestly know that we have a role. You know, those older guys help us a lot, and they push us to be the best us. They know that on Saturday or Friday or Thursday, no matter what the day is, we want to show up for them and for our team.
Trevian, the season's always long, right? You go through highs, you go through lows. It's never a straight line. Even here we are at the end of September, given the fact that you started the season in Atlanta against a really good Ole Miss team, and at halftime you got a zero on the scoreboard, isn't it amazing how this the emotions that you've already been through in a span of three games of, hey, at halftime we're going nowhere fast offensively, what's going on? You bounce back, you played well in the second half, you blow out Eastern Kentucky in week two, and then you get the terrific win against UCF. The emotions that you've already gone through after three games, again, you're just a young guy. Your career is just getting started. But isn't it kind of a cool deal, though, the fact that, hey, it isn't a straight line? There are going to be good days. There are going to be bad days. And what you go through to stay consistent to be a really good player.
Yeah, I think our team, you know, is building more team chemistry. We added a lot of new pieces in the offseason. And I feel like going forward, you know, we're just now really getting the feel of playing with each other. We have a lot of good players on this team, and I trust every single one of them 100%. This is going to be a great team. You know, we work very hard. We work very hard in the summer, spring, you know, pretty much the whole offseason. So it's showing up, and I'm proud of every single one of those guys.
You guys got a pretty strong running back room too, don't you? I mean, there's you, there's Jalen, there's Hassan Hall, Maurice Berkeley. I mean, I know they're younger guys too elsewhere, but that's a pretty stout group right there.
Oh, yes, sir. We all bring different pieces to the table. You know, we're all versatile. I love those guys in the room. You know, they push me from the beginning, help me become a better back. You know, just we have verses where we can just tell each other anything. You know, whether Jalen feels like I need to do something, whether I mess up on the play or not, you know, he'll let me know. Hassan will let me know. That's just a relationship that we have. You know, Maurice, he's like the oldest, so... You know, we all respect him and look up to him. You know, he's a hard worker as well.
Hmm. All right, we got to get one thing kind of cleared here. We've gotten this report. I just want to see if you come to the same conclusion. Who's the fastest guy on the team?
Oh, man, this is fastest guy on the team.
Yeah.
That's hard.
Hard?
Tyler Harrell. Okay. That's not hard. Tyler Harrell.
Yeah. See, everybody says Tyler Harrell has speed like nobody's ever seen. Is Tyler Harrell the fastest guy you've ever seen?
Yeah, he's the fastest guy I've ever seen. He's the fastest guy I've ever seen. He runs so fast, it seems like he's not even running.
You know what? That's when I said yesterday, I don't feel like I'm ever running.
You know.
But it's a little different concept.
Yeah.
Because I'm not.
Really enjoyed our visit, though, with
good kid.
Seems like Cooley, right?
Again, for a guy that skipped senior year, enrolled early.
Yeah, because remember, in North Carolina, like Virginia, I know, and sometimes we get confusing about this, but North Carolina and Virginia and some other states didn't play high school football in the fall. They had an abbreviated spring schedule. Cooley elected in Knightdale, outside of Raleigh, not to play, and what he ended up doing was early enroll was to Louisville.
Right.
After Christmas. So his high school season was wiped off the boards. Same with Tony Grimes was going to play at Carolina. Tony Grimes would have played last fall in Virginia when they canceled the season. He graduated early and played at Chapel Hill, knowing he'd get the year back.
You know, we talked a lot about Virginia's inability to win on the road. Louisville is going to have to solve that too. They've lost six straight road games. They go to Tallahassee. I do not need to emphasize the importance of this game for Mike Norvell and Florida State. We'll talk about that with Andrew Adelson. But something's got to give in that game as far as streak skill, because Louisville has been basically inept on the road, and Florida State, you know, they're staring three straight home losses if they don't close the deal on Saturday. That hasn't happened in 45 years, three straight home losses. So
76? No.
Watch out.
Whoa, that's 66.
Watch out, West Durham.
No, 66 would be 55. That's my age. 76. Okay, just checking. I'm there.
You got it.
Hey, Lan.
You got it.
Let me tell you the great thing. You know why they got these things called smartphones? They make stupid people smart.
The Packer and Durham Podcast.